So, what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Call your boyfriend, call your husband, or a man you know and love that needs to hear this. Gentlemen, this hour is for you. We'll be discussing everything from work, the crisis of the work labor force today. We'll be discussing working with God, sleeping St. Joseph, and how he's a model of humility and obedience. We'll also be diving into this kind of crisis for men of choosing between economic and educational progress over having a family. Who's happier today? People who are married or not married? And more importantly, which men are happier and show greater satisfaction? Is it a man who is pursuing a very high level in the workforce? Or a man who's balancing that with a family as well? We'll also discuss the importance of male influences and how they truly do make a difference, and how this shows us why we need more uncles in our lives. In fact, the cool uncle isn't just a cool uncle because he's fun and interactive, but there's actually a huge psychological impact on young boys and girls. And this is significant when recent trends from the census actually shows us from 2020 that today, 1 in 4 children have no fatherly presence in the home or during their upbringing. And so this shows all the more the importance of fathers. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. I want to start by talking about this trend of how many men are either having fewer children, or if they do have children, and again, that's a big if today, they're having them later on in life. Now, there's this subtle kind of pressure and undercurrent in society that we've not really addressed, and that is this undercurrent not just for women, but also for men not to have children and to not commit to marriage. And when they do have children, to not make that full-fledged commitment of being there day in and day out. Because the cultural mindset is that children, a wife, the ball and chain, whatever you want to call us women, and again, I'm joking, we prevent progress in life. We prevent achievement. And even for many people, they think that having children prevents happiness. I'll never forget a couple years ago, I was traveling out of state, and I was sitting in the airport, and I arrived really early, had a lot of work to do, and I was sitting for hours at the airport getting work done so I didn't have to sit in traffic, rather just get it done, be there early. And as slowly people arrived for the flight, one person after another, and there was a large group of people who were traveling together. I think that they were a work group, and many of them were taking their spouses as well. And there was this one rather loud individual, there tends to be, who's standing up, and as everyone comes in, he has a comment to make about everyone who shows up. And it was fascinating because two of his loudest, and might I add, rudest comments had to do with being a parent. Now, it started first, and I was sitting just a couple of seats away from him, with one of the gentlemen and his wife showing up, and all these people are, it's clear, they don't have their kids with them, and some people are making a big to-do about it. And this man clearly has no children and has no girlfriend or any spouse with him, says, "Oh, wow, look at Brian, typical," and he looks at everyone else, and he's making fun of the guy. The guy can't hear him. And he says, "Look at Brian, typical. There he is with his dad's socks, his dad's shorts. He looks like such a dad." And he said it as if this guy, Brian, was an absolute bore. And he just starts cracking up. But it was in such a derogatory way that it was bad to be a dad. And so my ears were kind of like peeking, and I was looking over. And next thing you know, I'm watching this group of people for the next half hour. And the most shocking of all the comments, apart from the rude comment about someone being a dad and dressing like a dad, was then this comment having to do, and I just emphasize here, men make fun of each other. This wasn't one of those making fun of each other moments. This is one of those moments like, this guy should be embarrassed. He's ridiculous. He's a dad. There's something wrong with him. And so then the next comment, there's a little baby who starts crying in the airport. Now, let me tell you, I've got a kid. She can cry, and sometimes in public. This kid hardly even chirped. And this man decides to go on and say, "Geez, do you hear that, kid? Someone needs to get some birth control around here. Someone definitely needs to use some birth control." And he starts yelling it almost belligerently in the airport. It was far too early for him to be drinking. I assume he wasn't. But what stood out to me is this man clearly had an axe to grind with the idea of being a parent. He clearly was in favor of hormonal birth control, possibly even abortion, and may even have some wounds having to do with fatherhood, whether his own lost fatherhood or the loss of his own father. But this goes to show this animosity at an extreme level where one man in a work environment has emphasized that anything to do with children, commitment, and the sacrifice of a father, maybe even your wardrobe and the dad joke, sense of humor that is, leads to someone being less than. And you can view someone as being less valuable. This was clearly what this man showed. And although this is an extreme, that is a subtle attitude that our culture has. Maybe you yourself have experienced this as a young man or a father of many. That today there's pressure to focus only on growth that is economic, career-oriented, or academic-driven. Or even growth that has to do with enjoying whatever you want to with regard to your hobbies. I was thinking about this past week as we celebrated Father's Day, and I was reading an article from Acton Institute written by Joseph Sund, and he really points to the lie of the culture that self-pursuit will make you happiest, and that is getting connected, bound by children, won't. You see, this is another attitude of the sexual revolution that's impacted men as well. Often we only speak about it from the perspective of women. Arthur Brooke wrote an article at The Atlantic, and he gave a couple approaches for men who are unmarried and married to ponder when it comes to marriage and family. I think the first one was striking, and that is, if you want to have kids, have them. And though this is super simple, I think that it speaks to many people who think that I can't have a kid. It'll get in the way. I can't have a kid. So-and-so told me I should wait till I have achieved this level of income. I've hit this career status. I've been married this long. I've traveled to these places. I competed in this race. Arthur Brooks, in the article at The Atlantic, in this simple piece of wisdom, breaks through all of that. Kids don't get in the way of living life. They actually enhance it. We'll talk about that more in just a moment. But he emphasizes the simple idea. If you want to have kids, have them. Why? Because many people are told that they can't. It's almost as if the license to have a family, the license to want to be married, even the license to want to spend time with your spouse and family is being taken away. And we have to reclaim that territory. If there's a sense of pride that we should have, we shouldn't be prideful, but we should be proud of ourselves, confident in our desires and confident in our achievements, and confident, especially for fathers and men, that you can indeed balance things with the right perspective. And in fact, that's what the next tip from Arthur Brooke in this article from The Atlantic emphasizes. He says, don't resist the work and sacrifice that fatherhood entails. You see, the risk, the work, and the sacrifice that fatherhood demands doesn't take away from the great achievements that will be made for work. Sure, possibly, and I say possibly because it's true, although statistically not realistic, possibly you may prolong your career dreams and goals. You will definitely be emptying financial resources, and you will be giving time, energy, and attention. But is all of this a bad thing? What's fascinating, if we talk about this for just a moment, a study done back in 2001 actually showed that men who have children and live with their children, are present in the children's lives, and are there day to day, that they actually work 6 hours longer a week than those men who don't live with their children. And even those men who had children but didn't live with them worked 2 hours more a week than those who didn't have any kids. So what we see is that men who have children actually spend longer hours at work than those who don't, by 6 additional hours. No, this is fascinating because I've seen a lot of studies and talked to many people, high-level executives, and they've often commented that when they see a man with a wedding ring on, it actually is a sign that that man has a greater sense of commitment and responsibility, that he's going to have possibly even a harder work ethic. Why? Because more's on the line. He's chosen to take responsibility and to provide for that responsibility of a spouse and a family. And so, in fact, as some people think that marriage and family will get in the way, top-level executives don't really think this when it comes to men. They may think about it when it comes to women, but when it comes to men, men who are married and have children tend to be more trustworthy, more responsible, and harder workers. And, clearly, they too do put some longer hours in. Joseph Sun, in the Acton Institute article that I mentioned, and I'll post a link to it on social media, mentioned something that I thought was a great indicator for all men to be aware of when it comes to their families. If resentment begins to breed, that is, you start to feel as if your family is getting in the way of work that you have to do, that attending a basketball game after work, or leaving a little early from work for a dance recital or a practice for your kid is getting in the way of the work, then that resentment, that frustration, is a very strong indicator to reevaluate your priorities. Because the reality is that family life should actually both inform and disrupt your work. It should inform your work because it should be the purpose for your work. But it should also disrupt your work because the reality is life happens. Now, I'm not saying don't put in a full day's work, but be open and recognize that family life requires that you are all in all the time. You can't just leave and go to work and not take your family with you. Lace on your mind and heart and always available and calling upon you on these pesky little things we call our phones with instant communication. You see, that sign of resentment is a great indicator that you have to continue to keep in check your priorities. Why do you work? Why do you do what you do? Sure, you may love it, but it's ultimately about being a leader, a protector, and a provider as a man. Being a leader and a protector and a provider, as many have said, are God-given roles. And it's important to recognize this. Dr. Philip Chavez at the Men's Academy often talks about how being a leader and protector and provider is that God-given role. These are pillars of what it means to be a man. And yet today, society wants to take that away from you as men. Even women want to take it away from you. The culture wants to say, don't worry, don't have kids, don't make attachments. Don't get that ball and chain. If you do, if the ball becomes too heavy, ditch her. This is the attitude that we have today. And that's why I think it comes to another perspective that we have to touch on, that Arthur Brooks in the article at The Atlantic mentioned, that we need to celebrate fatherhood more often. You see, fatherhood, and I'm not talking about a day for fathers every month or multiple times throughout the year. What I'm talking about is complimenting fathers, acknowledging the sacrifice, the achievement, the love, and generosity that fathers show. By complimenting other men, it helps to give a greater value to fathers and even to yourself if you are a father. This is something that all of us can do, whether men or women, fathers or not. You see, men, you have a great challenge before you, and the challenge is this: to reject, as Joseph Sun comments, the idolatry of self. The idolatry of self, that is, that's in the pursuit of happiness that many people are told, this is what you must follow. This is what you must choose. Career, work, education, personal hobbies, economic growth. That's what you want and need first, or that's all you need. Deny it. Reject it. You know, we have these temptations that have always been present, the pride of life, the lust of the eye, the money, all of these things that are so tempting for us to turn to and reduce our life toward, but are some of our greatest downfalls. So here's the question. What happens if you, as a father, or you as a man, choose to become a father? What if, as a father, you were an involved and active participant in the raising of children? What would happen? You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio, where we often talk, specifically on Wednesdays, about issues confronting men and the great pillar of our faith and masculinity, St. Joseph. Coming up, we're going to be discussing Sleeping St. Joseph and how he's a model of obedience and sacrifice and humility. But what would happen if you as a man were more involved as a parent or became a parent that was actively involved? Well, we've actually seen that, yes, as I mentioned before, you sacrifice, perhaps, giving time, one of our hottest commodities, energy, attention, maybe even some bags under your eyes. You even prolong career achievements and dreams. You definitely empty your coffers to a certain extent, while all the while still building them up. Why? Because you're a provider and a protector. It's what you're called to. You might even be involved in some of the mundane things of life, as Joseph's son commented, from diapers and driving to and fro for various practices, and also the feedings. I'm currently starting to feed my baby solids, slowly, Grant, because it takes work. Learning to do a new thing. Like all things you teach your children, it takes time, it takes energy, it takes effort, it takes patience. All of things that are highly valued in the workforce, which is another reason as to why men who are married and have children are actually looked at by top-level executives as being more responsible, harder workers. Now, here's what's interesting. We have to measure your life as a man not with regard to financial gain. That's the problem. Today we're told to really measure everything according to dollars and cents. A friend of mine recently commented that she was pregnant again. She's had a lot of babies in the first number of years. And in fact, I had a number of friends the last couple years who've commented that their husbands have reacted in the same exact way. And maybe you have too, or maybe this is your fear. As soon as the new baby announcement is made, maybe the joyful dance and celebration and giddiness and baby clothes pondering and Instagram following doesn't quite happen for the man the way it does for the women. Instead, takes out the calculator or the iPhone today and starts calculating how much this is going to cost him. Additional diapers, clothing, college education, you name it. Men tend to reduce new children to dollars and cents. They're terrified. But why are you terrified as a man? Because you have this God-given role of being a leader, a protector, and a provider. And when the idea of having the responsibility of new human life is presented before you, your mission is called into question. But not only is your mission called into question, you're called to step up. And that's terrifying. It's exhausting. It's going to require a greater commitment. So instead of measuring according to dollars and cents, you have to start to measure according to a different perspective. A perspective that shows in many of the studies that, in fact, when you give of yourself, you're much happier. We've seen time and time again in the Christian tradition that, in fact, a life given is a life full of joy. Jesus Christ on the cross showed us the ultimate and truest of sacrifices. Life-giving, self-giving love. And guess what? It was bloody, it was bruised, and it was beaten. He probably had bags under his eyes from lack of sleep as well. See, at the heart of what it means to be a man is sacrifice. Where does the sacrifice come from? Well, it comes from the universal call to the priesthood. All men are called to partake in the priestly dimension. What do priests do? They make sacrifices. In 2016, Boston College data showed that millennial fathers, those millennials who actually have chosen to subscribe to becoming fathers, were actually more likely than those who didn't become fathers to say this: my life conditions are excellent. Excellent! How often do you hear a millennial today saying that life is excellent? You see, this is what we see in men who are choosing to become fathers. In fact, in that Atlantic article written by Arthur Brooks, he commented how Men receive what's referred to as the helper's high. It's a natural happiness drug that occurs when you give yourself in life. You see, men are being shown to have a higher sense of satisfaction when they have children. They show up and they stick around. Men who have children, show up and stick around, are also less likely to be depressed, and they enjoy higher levels of happiness. This is why men need to stop believing the lie that self-pursuit of career, economic achievement, and education will make you happiest. It's just not true. Men who are married and have kids have higher life satisfaction, less depression, and enjoy higher levels of happiness. If you're afraid of the dollars and cents, that's a good thing. You should be, but not to the point of being crippled by it. Because you have a sense of responsibility, and it should drive you forward to greater commitment and a greater act of love in providing, protecting, and leading those entrusted to your care. I'll be right back here on Trending with Tim Ray, and I'm going to discuss specifically the importance of understanding St. Joseph under the title of Sleeping St. Joseph. How when you work, you have to work with God and have it in the right perspective. What do the monks say? I'll tell you in just a little bit. We'll also discuss why having male influences beyond fathers in children's lives is important.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, maybe you're an uncle, or maybe you had an uncle who played a pivotal role in your life. So often we talk about absent fathers and how grandfathers help to fill the gap, but we don't speak often enough of the major influence that uncles have on their nephews and nieces. You would be surprised. Recent data from the 2020 census has revealed that 1 in 4 children grow up without a father present in their lives. Something, though, we do know, and in fact, I hadn't realized this, but a lot of research has been done showing how important and fundamental an uncle's influence is on his nieces and nephews. And I thought that that was really exciting to see. And it's a reminder that being the cool uncle is actually a good thing. Now, be careful where you go with that so-called cool uncle vibe, because there's some people who are just, I was going to say stick it, because it's just frustrating when that cool uncle turns into, it's all about me and let me show off what I have. It's about you being present. It's about you showing a good example. Now, there have been countless stories told of young kids who, even when the uncle didn't live in a close proximity, they would treasure, years later, the kids would, those summer vacations, those weekend stays, those occasional outings and phone calls that would happen from the uncles who were around them in their lives. Why is it that not only the father role, but the role of an uncle, a grandfather, and other positive male influences matter so much? From the football coach, to the male school teacher, to that man at church, to the priest who sets an example. And in fact, why have so many people been so upset and scandalized by the examples that our priests have set? They're scandalized because there's something very special about the love that a man has for children. It's fundamental, and when brought into question, has quite a negative impact. You see, fathers give something very, very important. And I talked about this yesterday on the show when we were talking about the sad, sad words that Khloe Kardashian, one of the Kardashians from Keeping Up with the Kardashians, had to say after having gone through a nose job and been upset over a photo that was unfiltered with no makeup on of her that went viral on social media and that attorneys and publicists had to chase down to ask to be erased from the internet. I talked about how men can make a difference in this crisis where girls are crying out, saying that their hearts, their souls, their bodies are hurting from this unrealistic pressure they're put under and the scrutiny that they experience. You see, fathers provide affirmation, but not just fathers. All male influences provide affirmation to kids. Why? Well, some people have commented about how there's a fundamental difference between mothers and fathers. Mothers carry a child for 9 months. Mothers can physically nourish the child with their body, producing what's necessary to nourish a kid. Mothers tend to have to be tied, at least through the first 9 months and often through that first year, very closely and intimately to a child and the child's needs. In fact, women, more so than men, have a natural tendency toward parenthood. In fact, St. John Paul the Great, in his book Love and Responsibility, before he was a pope, as Carol Votila, actually commented about how women have this natural tendency toward children. In fact, they can tend to desire being a mother and desire a baby more than we can desire a husband at times. This is how intimately bound femininity is to being a mother. But for fathers, men specifically, men have this capacity to conceive children and leave. In fact, it's a little bit more of a natural instinct of men to leave. It's something that we see in the animal kingdom that still continues in human people. The challenge for men to stay present, stick around after conceiving a baby, is not as natural as it is for a mother to stick around and love her child. But also, that actually has a significant impact on children. You see, a father's response to a child is different than a mother's response. A father isn't as intimately bound up to the life of the child. The life of the child, especially in those earliest months and days, find their identity in their mother. The father, in a certain respect, is almost an outsider. Not in a negative sense. Not that you're not important. This is actually why you are so important. If you are, and when you become a father, because you represent an outsider, someone who kind of didn't have to love you, wasn't, you know, part of that caring of the baby, even though you should have provided the caring of the mother during pregnancy and during postpartum. You see, the father chooses to love the child. He chooses to be present. He chooses the child. He notices the child in the midst of the many. You see, this is what is so special about the father. The father loves in a totally different and unique way, a way that only male affirmation and male influences can provide, validate, and affirm for the psychological upbringing and fundamental important dimensions that a child needs. You see, a father's love is necessary because it provides validation and affirmation that a mother shows in a very different way. And again, I come back to this time and time again. In all of sacred scripture, there are a few very, very key moments that we should pay attention to when it comes to when God speaks. The first one has to do with when God is creating all of creation. He's looking at each created thing from thing to thing, and he says it's good, from the plants to the water to the sky. Everything he's looking and saying, it's good. But finally, when he comes to the human person and he creates the human person in Genesis chapter 1, now he looks at all of creation. He looks to the human person, the pinnacle of creation, and now he says that it's very good. You see, God's very first thing that he does is he affirms the human person. He shows how important affirmation is for people, but especially for fathers to show toward their children. Because we're God's children, created in his image and likeness. But this isn't the only time that God speaks so clearly and distinctly in an affirming way. In fact, there are only two times in all of the Gospels where God speaks during Jesus' public life. And once it's at the beginning of his public ministry. It's in Matthew chapter 3 at the baptism of Christ in the Jordan. Right as we know, here comes the Messiah. This is the chosen one. In a cloud, dove representing the Holy Spirit, God speaks at the baptism of Jesus Christ in a loud and booming voice, and he says, "This is my beloved Son with whom I am well pleased." What did God just do? The one of two times that he speaks during Christ's public life, his Son, he provides an act of affirmation, words of affirmation. And then again, he says the same thing in Matthew chapter 17 at the transfiguration of Jesus Christ in Mount Tabor, which Peter, James, and John, the inner circle of apostles, witnessed as Moses and Elijah, representing the law and the prophets, appeared with Jesus. What did God say yet again? "This is my beloved Son with whom I am well pleased." God shows how important it is for fathers to affirm their children. But he shows how affirmed we are in him. In God the Father, and in Christ, and the mission of Christ. You see, this is why uncles, fathers, grandfathers, and other male influences are so important. They show an outside figure choosing, affirming, and validating children. Again, as I mentioned, 1 in 4 children today have no father during their upbringing. This is why being that good uncle, being that positive male influence, is so important. I want to challenge you as men today to be that positive influence for kids. I was reading earlier this morning a story about one man who lost his faith. He lost his faith that he grew up just slightly with, even though going to Catholic school and so on. And then years later, he remembers one important event that occurred in his life. That even though he went to Catholic high school playing football, he remembers before every major football game, they would go to Mass as a team. And he had, for years, ingrained in his mind the vision of his three coaches kneeling before the game, kneeling in the church, praying. And that symbol, an example of men kneeling and praying, set an incredible example for him. And it was that image in his mind that years later encouraged him to give Catholicism, the faith of his childhood, a second shot after practically being an atheist, of focusing more on science than the reality that God created us and created us with a purpose. And part of that purpose is to be with him. That image of men kneeling and praying has been a resounding cry for decades on end that has drawn other men to their knees, other men to God, other men to faith, other men to a life of sacrifice, a life of love, and to a life of salvation in Jesus Christ. I often ponder St. John Paul the Great and how often he would refer to the example that his father set, that from a very early age he remembers seeing his father kneeling and praying. Now remember, his father lost his spouse. His father lost a son. And then John Paul II lost all of them, his mother, his father, and his beloved brother. But time and time again, St. John Paul II would be inspired and moved forward by the faith that was passed on by his own father, the model and example of a kneeling and praying dad. Why is it that this physical gesture of kneeling matters so much? Well, it's a gesture of humility. It's an act of obedience to prayer. It's a recognition of God as creator and us as creatures. Men provide an influence that is unrepeatable, that has a lasting image and impact on children. This is why, and we've often spoken of this, why there's this cry of the fatherless today, this plea of so many young people who are rioting on the streets, as we saw in this summer of terror of 2020, rioting and looting, acts of violence, depression, suicide, anger, anxiety, lawlessness, joblessness, refusal to work. Why do we see it? The toppling of statues. All of this has been a representation predominantly of this loss of fatherhood in society and a rejection of anything that has to do with fathers, whether God our Father, earthly fathers, or any sort of paternal authority on earth, because men have let kids down and they're angry. But you as a man can be an influence that young boys and girls otherwise wouldn't have. And I'm not just talking as well about young boys and girls. To their death, especially young boys, desire the affirmation and the guidance of older men, those wise sages in their lives, who are just a little ahead of them in life. Whether it's that compliment, that time, just being in each other's presence, discussions about work, life, literature, men savor the influence of other men. Girls are craving the affirmation, validation from men. Let's not leave this culture parched for the affirmation, the validation that only men can have, and the incredible influence and model of faith that you can show the next generation. We'll be right back here on Trending. We're going to discuss in particular why prayer and prayer on your knees matters. We're going to discuss sleeping St. Joseph and keeping God with you as you work. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
If you're not already subscribed to the podcast, I want to ask you to do me a favor. Don't miss an episode. Join our mission. If this is something you enjoy, something you found helpful for talking about some of the hottest topics trending in your life, let us know by subscribing. Head over to relevantradio.com/trending. If there's a topic you would like to hear discussed, all you have to do is click that contact page, and I'd love to hear from you. From email to Instagram, you name it. I'm most active on Instagram. I would love to hear what's trending in your life, what challenges and questions you might have. But please make sure you subscribe and leave a 5-star review if you're listening on Apple Podcast. Let's talk about work. Today, I love on Wednesdays to dive in as much as we're able to St. Joseph and masculinity. We've discussed the importance of male influence, especially being an uncle in young people's lives. And we've also discussed why we shouldn't accept the undercurrent and the subtle influences saying men don't get married, men don't have children. That's a lie. And if you missed that part of the show, the podcast will be available a little later at relevantradio.com/trending. You don't have to miss a single thing. Tomorrow is our weekly marriage hour. Today, I want to dive into this idea of work with God and understanding how sleeping St. Joseph plays a part in this. St. Benedict, who founded this great tradition of monasticism and the Benedictines, had this prayer saying, Ora et Labora. Prayer at work. The understanding was prayer at work and work at prayer. That when you're working, you're praying at the same time. And that when you're praying, you're actually doing your work. That prayer and work can't be separated. He taught this to his monks, but it's something that could and should be taught also to all of us. In my years as a young adult prior to being married, I spent a lot of time with the religious community of St. John, the Brothers and Sisters of St. John. They're a French religious order. They had a very profound influence on me. In fact, I spent a full summer living in community with other young people who were learning the life and the prayer momentum of monastic prayer. And the idea of this was that young people, professionals, future mothers, fathers, future married couples, that they would be influenced profoundly by monasticism. Because, you see, monks get this, ora et labora, prayer at work and work at prayer. But some of these monks realized how important and necessary it was for us laymen, non-religious, to learn to incorporate prayer throughout our day. You see, they already get to be doing the work of God, and so often they have the perspective of God. But many of us aren't doing the work of God day in and day out, per se, or we don't think. We tend to miss the priorities and the purpose of what we're doing. That's the problem. But when you pray throughout your day, you understand the perspective and the responsibility of all of the work of your hands. It keeps you moral and ethical. It keeps you responsible, faith-filled, joyful, persistent, and sacrificial. But when you also understand that the very prayer that you do during your day in and of itself is work, you understand that you have a responsibility. Now, we shouldn't just think of prayer as work and drudgery, but as a part of what we're called to. And so many of us find ourselves in challenging circumstances when it comes to work, whether ethical crises during Pride Month and everything from waving a gay pride flag on the same flagpole, Lord forgive us, as the American flag. I mean, that's a travesty, an absolute travesty. To the challenges of having to help fundraise for LGBTQ nonprofits that go against our conscience. You see, there are challenges in the workplace to ethical means of research, of seeing that employees are the greatest asset, not tools to be used to achieve financial progress and gain. Prayer is necessary at work to help us keep our circumstances and priorities right, in right order. So that we don't put work above family. So we don't choose to stay at work perpetually and not show up, stand up, be present. There is this phrase commonly said in the history of the church that has been lost, yet we need to turn to yet again. It's a Latin phrase, ite ad Iosef. It means go to Joseph. The idea was, is if you need something, if you're struggling, repeat this phrase, remember it, and remember to do it. Ite ad Yosef, go to Joseph. Why? Because he is an incredibly powerful intercessor, and he isn't called upon enough. That is why right now, the Holy Father, Pope Francis, has declared this year the year of Saint Joseph. Because we need his intercession, his powerful intercession. After God, God has those who he has loved the most. And his very earthly father, Saint Joseph, and the Blessed Virgin Mary are two of the most powerful intercessors for us in our lives. Ite and Joseph, this is why we are called to go to Joseph. Sacred Scripture has quite a bit to say about work. In fact, in Tobit chapter 4, we read, seek counsel from every wise man. At all times, bless the Lord. Ask him to make all your paths straight and to grant success to all your endeavors and plans. You see, the book of Tobit is emphasizing the importance of wise counsel, that the Lord should be whom we bless and we glorify in our work, and that it is in God that our paths are made straight. Not crooked and confused, miscombobulated. Because that becomes discouraging. But when there's a clear path forward, there's a path of hope. my husband had been discerning a job change and really needed to make a job change. And we were praying last couple of years for, you know, Lord, what direction do you have in store for him? And a lot of doors would open and then they'd shut halfway and other doors would come and go. And then this door, an unexpected door, all of a sudden opened wide. And we were so surprised. Yet when every other door is closed and one door is clearly open and you've remained prayerful and you've fought to remain in a state of grace, there tends to be an answer there. An answer that emphasizes that God is in control and he has a plan that isn't necessarily our plan. Now, we can understand this better in many work circumstances, again, if we're remaining prayerful, if we're trusting in the Lord, and if we're staying in a state of grace through regular reception of the Holy Eucharist, but worthy reception of the Holy Eucharist by regularly going to the Sacrament of Reconciliation. Bending down upon our knees, begging the Lord for his forgiveness and receiving it. That absolute gift of God's grace and forgiveness pouring down upon us. You see, Tobit gets it right. In sacred scripture, Tobit emphasizes to grant success to all of our endeavors and plans. How? By asking God to make straight the path. You see, when we pray at work, when we have this theme of St. Benedict, Ora et Labora, prayer at work, we have a perspective that what we need to get done will get done, that who we need to get it done for will be done. You see, how do we remind ourselves, what do we need to do to continue to keep this perspective day in and day out? I want to challenge you. Find moments throughout your day to pause and pray. Invoke the Lord, his counsel, his wisdom, to make straight your paths, to guide you in your daily to-do list, to guide you in your long-term goals and responsibilities, to balance the limited time that we have. It's so easy to say, well, I don't have enough time for this. I don't have enough time for that. No. Set your priorities straight. Say no to the things you should say no to, and hold first and foremost and tightly to the things that you should be doing and have the responsibility to. This is why on Monday's happy hour this week, you can listen to the podcast. We'll post a link to that happy hour in the show notes today at relevantradio.com/trending, where you can subscribe to the podcast and contact me through social media. This is why we talked in that show about knowing when it's a season and a time to say no more often in life. This is what helps us to have our perspective, prayer. The psalmist in Psalm 89 says, "Grant success to the work of our hands, O Lord." This prayer is a prayer that I often pray. I love praying the Psalms day in and day out. Our religious priests and sisters, the great tradition of monasticism, provides the Liturgy of the Hours, also known as the Divine Office, that priests are required to pray every day, known as the Breviary as well. And in that, you hear the psalmists and the canticles and so much of the depth and breadth of sacred scripture alive throughout your day, present there in the writings. Why is this beneficial? Because it puts context every day for you and I to understand God is in control. God is the only perspective I should have, and he makes straight the path. He makes clear the perspective. He sets the priorities, and he teaches me to love, and he helps me to love, and he is love himself, if only I would rely on him. And beg St. Joseph. Remember the prayer, Ite ad Joseph. Go to St. Joseph. One of the apostles, St. James, it was written about him by the historian Eusebius and others even before that. It was common knowledge that he was referred to as camel knees. Had you ever heard this? He was referred to as camel knees because it was known that he would spend quite a bit of time on his knees in prayer. In fact, as St. Eusebius wrote, he was in the habit of entering alone into the temple and was frequently found upon his knees begging for forgiveness for the people, so that his knees became hard like those of a camel. That's Our dear Saint, Saint James, the Apostle Saint James, there in Jerusalem, he would be known to go in time and time again. I'm pretty sure this is Saint James the Greater, not the Lesser, because there are two Saint Jameses. And we read Saint Eusebius says, all this time spent kneeling in prayer, in consequence of this constantly bending them in his worship of God, this is what led him to have what's known as camel knees. You see, we need to develop the habit of hard prayer. We need to develop the habit of camel knees, hardened knees from prayer. You know, I so often think about how, I know personally, coming from a fitness background, I know many men desire this with this athleticism. The men want to be nimble and agile. They want to be strong and capable of protecting and providing and being present. Well, we should desire to be nimble and agile in our faith. And I think that this idea of the camel knees that St. James had is an example of how we're called to have that strength in life and in faith, to be nimble and agile in our faith. Kneel on the ground, humble yourself with your kids, but kneel on the ground, humble yourself before the heavenly King. Remember, to be a priest means to make sacrifice. And all of us are called to participate in the priestly sacrifice. Turn to Sleeping Saint Joseph. Sleeping Saint Joseph, there was this great tradition of turning to him as a great intercessor. You see, some of the greatest things Saint Joseph did were because of dreams that he had while sleeping. The profound example Saint Joseph set was that when he'd awake, he'd show his obedience through action. We read in Matthew chapter 1, he did as the angel of the Lord commanded him. He did as he was commanded in his sleep. He trusted in the Lord, showing his confidence that he would take a rest. Trust in God's providence and the virtue of work and the virtue of rest.